Welcome to Inside Ivy Hoops, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, and there's a lot to talk about regarding Ivy League basketball this week. The big news, of course, the Ivy Madness tournaments being scheduled. A lot to talk about. Predetermined campus rotations. Here to delve into it, I'm Mike Tony, editor of Ivy Hoops Online, joined by the esteemed IHO writer, George Clark. How are you, George?
Very well, thank you, Michael. It's nice to be with you again.
Well, likewise. Always great to be with you too, George. And might as well start off with the big news dropped very surprisingly today by the Ivy League office that the league will, in fact, continue its having a predetermined campus rotation for the men's and women's basketball tournaments all the way through 2025. Harvard will host it next year, March 14th and 15th at Leviades Pavilion, and it will continue to follow what the league calls a geographic rotation, but seems to be more of alternating between New England schools and non-New England schools for the most part for the next 6 years. Getting every Ivy arena that hasn't already gone, so that means no Palestra, no additional tournament at John J. Lee Amphitheater. We'll continue to have the top four men's and women's teams on each side competing, and it's just, to me, to start off with, it's a bit of a surprise that you get this announcement before the tournament even happens. You know, in the past, we've had these announcements from the Ivy League office, you know, after the season is over in the spring, and we're getting this, 3 weeks before this year's tournament. It's a bit of a surprise getting that, certainly getting that tournament, huge news midweek. At the end of February here. And it also strikes me as a surprise that the league is committing to this all the way to 2025, publicly committing to a set rotation, all before seeing how this first tournament away from the Palestra at a venue with reduced capacity goes. You know, it's instead of waiting and seeing, they kind of just doubled down, or in this instance with six more tournaments, they sextupled down, I guess you could say. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Our Rob Brown, IHO writer, another IHO writer extraordinaire, was able to talk with Robin Harris this afternoon. Robin Harris, of course, the Ivy League's executive director, and she said that, you know, they announced it now because they were ready. They had this decision in the works for a while. They actually had the rotation plan when they announced Yale as the site for this year, but just wanted to double check things. It was an AD-driven decision. According to Harris, Executive Director Harris, and in the end there was complete consensus among the ADs, and they went to the presidents. They felt they had great experiences with the first two tournaments. They expect another great one at Yale. They want to share that with the rest of the league. And, everybody gets a shot. What's your reaction to the news out of Princeton today, George?
Well, I'm relieved that the tournament will be back at Princeton the year after next, before they start going to some of the more remote outposts in the league. We've been fortunate in the league so far that the men's and women team made the tournament. Both genders qualified for the Ivy tournament in 2 years it was at the Palestra. And it looks like certainly Yale will be number one seed, I would imagine, this year. And the women will definitely be in as well. So from the perspective, the Yale perspective, it's great that they'll be on their home floor soon. I hope not in the next couple of years, but at some point, the Ivy League's tournament host may not have a team in the tournament on either side. And that, from a fan's perspective, that's tough. I think this is a product to some degree of the expanding relationship between the Ivy League and ESPN. I think they're more concerned with broadcast value games than they are necessarily the teams that are participating. It's not a random thing. Everybody's going to get a chance, so you can't really quibble with it on that ground. It's interesting, and we'll just have to see how it plays out. I just continue to hope, of course, that the Tigers are in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, any sample is just a sample, but, you know, in following the reaction to the news on IHO's Twitter, which is obviously a Twitter feed curated to get as much Ivy League basketball related buzz as possible, the reactions does seem to be, I have to say, pretty universally critical from different angles. First of all, there are those that say, well, you know, you've got the Palestra, one of the historic, most historic gyms, venues in the nation, with the biggest, the greatest seating capacity. You're not using that. You just committed to 6 years of not using that. There's of course the argument which I've favored. Why not just let the number one seeds host? I don't think anyone was ever expecting that to happen. The league's been very clear. Robin Harris has been very clear that the league wants to keep the men and women together and have it kind of be a unified celebration of Ivy League basketball, which is understandable.
And that's fine if both teams from the school are in the tournament and they've kind of lucked out at this point. But what happens, and with the number one seed hosting, seems when you've got men and women, you're not going to have both teams be number one seed going into the tournament. So the only fair way to do it that way, and I'm not suggesting it should not be done this way, but have alternating, or the women number one host the tournament 1 year and the men number one host it next, if they were to go that way.
Yeah, you could kind of try to combine concepts, the competitive advantage concept with the unifying the genders concept. But, you know, I feel like they're trying to combine concepts in a sense with what they've committed to today, which is every Ivy arena gets to have one, so we're trying to be as fair as we can and share the experience, while also kind of definitely eliminating any pretense of trying to look out for competitive advantage. Certainly, that's you're just kind of saying, okay, here's the rotation. Doesn't matter what how you finish. You're hosting it 1 year. You're hosting it the next year. So, you know, you're kind of combining concepts a little bit there. The argument still persists in some circles. Why not have it at a neutral site every single year? Just commit to one place. Maybe in New York City. I know that's something that Coach Brian Earle advocated for on the podcast a couple weeks back. You know, what do you what do you do? I mean, there's no, if there was a perfect solution, I feel like we all would have hit upon it a long time ago. And there were a couple of people saying, well, just go back to no tournament and just do the auto bid. But I think once you've opened the box, you can't stuff it back in. The tournament's here to stay. There's no doubt about that.
I was not, being in one of the old guard, as it were, I would not favor the idea of having a tournament, because I thought one of the distinctive things about the Ivy League, the round robin concept that produced one champion after 14 games and times, of course, memorable playoff. Two teams finished tied for first place. I love that. Here we are. There's 2 weeks to go, 2 weekends left, 4 games. And you've got 6 teams who are still alive. And I don't know all of the combinations. I haven't tried to figure that out. But those 6 teams could still be alive after this week, depending on what happens. And that's terrific. That's terrific. You pay more attention to where your team is in relation to fourth place than you do to first.
Which is, of course, an argument that many made, including myself, against having a tournament, that you're valuing middle finishes and mediocrity, to put it crudely, I guess, as opposed to finishing.
Well, I disagree with that, because I've attended a lot of games this year, not just Princeton games, other games, and every game that I've seen has been a street fight.
That's certainly true.
The intensity is fabulous, because the talent is fabulous.
Yeah. I mean, it would be a shame to see, on the men's side, Princeton, let's say, finish third and kind of have their season end, I suppose, without having a tournament to prove themselves. Or on the women's side, Harvard, certainly.
Certainly.
I can see that. I do favor the idea floated out there by former Penn athletic director Steve Bilski of cutting it down to 3 seeds and having the 3 and 2 play for the right to play the 1 seed. But that's obviously not going to happen. A lot of these arguments are moot point, but it doesn't mean we can't have them. It doesn't mean we can't think about what we'd like to see or what we think would be best for the league. Certainly the tournament is something, having it is something that a lot of coaches and players favor in terms of raising visibility for the league, rewarding more of the hard work that is poured into high achievement among all 8 Ivies. So it's going to continue, just a matter of the implementation. From a fan perspective, though, I think there's very valid grounds, reason for concern about capacity sizes and location. You know, there's got to be a lot of, and I know there's a lot of dedicated Ivy fans out there that are not willing to go to Hanover or Ithaca to cheer their team on, to support the team in a tournament type atmosphere. And that's an issue. I think that's something the league's going to have to.
It is an issue. I don't know how that ever gets resolved. And they've done it. I guess we have to live with it. And now we have 6 teams still trying to make the field this year.
Yeah, we do. I mean, it's going to be a scrum every year. And the drama of who gets the 4 seed, who sneaks in, I think that's something that's pretty evergreen. That's never going to change or go away. That's going to be part of the enduring appeal of having the tournament.
Before we move on in that regard, Michael, I do want to make a point. From what I've been able to gather sticking my nose in things at times. The players love the tournament. And they'd love to play it at home, but frankly, I don't know that they really care. The coaches are more concerned about, for instance, having to play Penn at the Plaster or having to play Yale than the players are. They love the idea of getting a chance to play in the postseason. And I think that should be the concern that outranks any of the other issues that may be talked about.
Well, I agree. It is about the student athletes first, more so than the fans, frankly. Certainly. And you know,
that's a great term, student athlete. And we're probably the only cops that can legitimately use that term.
Yeah, it's a term that I fear is getting a little antiquated lately, but yeah, no, I think that's a good place to leave it, and we'll see how it goes this year. I think it, you know, from an evaluating standpoint, seeing how it goes this year, how folks that are there report on the atmosphere, is it an electrifying sellout? Are fans able to get there? Are there any concerns with how does it play on TV? These are all, you know, as far as the visibility of the league is concerned, which is obviously something that the league does value. It's something that it all has to be considered. But the primary consideration, as you astutely said, is how does it impact the student athletes going forward? So let's talk a little bit about what some groups of these student athletes were up to. A lot of midweek news this week. That's one bit. The other kernel is Princeton with a huge, huge win on the women's side Tuesday night at Penn, pulling away with authority in the second half, powered as usual by Bella Allery. Just dominant again.
Well, you know, Mike, I saw both those games 5 weeks ago. I guess it was they played at Princeton, and it was kind of fourth quarter collapse by Princeton, and Penn hung on at the end. And very nice game. My impression after that game was that there wasn't a lot of difference between these two teams. They're both well coached, a lot of talent. They could play 10 games and split. But after last night, I really believe that Princeton separated itself from. And I think now if they played 10 games, Princeton might win 7 or 8 of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like Penn has been the better team overall in conference play. I mean, certainly Princeton had to deal with Bella Allery's injury and coming back from that, and of course the absence of Abby Meyer this year. And I feel like maybe Princeton's had a couple of obstacles thrown their way that has hindered them somewhat, and maybe they're kind of hitting full steam ahead now. But I feel like on balance during league play, I do feel that Penn's actually been the better team or had the better showings against Ivy competition. I think their defense has been stronger. I mean, it feels a little awkward to say all of this, you know, not even 48 hours removed from what happened Tuesday night, but I still think there's not a lot of separation there.
What I see is Princeton has increased its depth in the last several weeks. They're very Allery centric. Why not? She's one of the players here, and they tended to really rely on her, probably somewhat to detriment but the last several weeks, Courtney Bankart said the other night after playing Columbia, Belden did not have a particularly big game that night and went down with what appeared to be possible bad ankle sprain, although she did get back in the game. But she didn't play really well. They had a lot of contribution down the bench. Courtney asked her about that factor. She said, oh, yes, we've got a lot of kids that are now starting to come into their own in terms of contribution. So I just think they're an improving team. And if you pick your poison, if you slow Bella down, you've got Gabriel Rush, who's knocking threes. You've got Whitfield, handles the ball as well as anybody in the league. And they just got a lot of talent. Which is not to say Penn won't win the tournament, but you're going to have to get through Princeton to do it.
Oh, certainly. No, I mean, I think it's great having two teams of that caliber in the league year after year. Certainly, it still has been a duopoly, obviously, on the women's side for the past 5 years or so.
And, nine.
What's that?
Nine. Princeton's won six, and Penn has won three titles in the last 9 years.
Well, yeah, I was at Penn. Penn didn't really get to the top, though, until 2014. They were still kind of ascendant under Coach McLaughlin up to that point. But
terrific coach. He's done a great job.
Yeah, he certainly has. And it'll be, you know, it should be noted that Princeton now does have the inside track to getting the number one seed, given that they got the win. You know, they've obviously split the head-to-head series, but Princeton has the second tiebreaker of having beaten Harvard on the road, and Penn's lost to Harvard in double overtime. Now we've got a situation where Princeton's got that tiebreaker, although they could, they could lose it.
Anything can happen.
If they lose to Harvard Jadwin here, but as things stand currently, the Tigers do have the inside track, and we'll see how it goes. It'll be fascinating to see how this finishes out, if they wind up sharing the title, and who knows, they could even looking ahead, they could even wind up playing each other on a neutral court this time to decide who wins the Ivy League tournament in a few weeks. Looking back, let's switch genders here. Let's go over to the men's side and what was a very eventful yet again, white knuckler filled weekend. Penn again with yet another overtime game Friday night, their third straight at the Palestra, and it was their second in a row that did not go their way. A truly shocking loss. Not necessarily that they lost, but how they lost. Ellis with a game-winning bucket with, 0.4 seconds left? inbound under the basket there. That's if you're Penn, you don't wanna blow that. Really tough game, but they say
you gotta feel good for Columbia.
Yes, you do, because they had so many games like that. Columbia has lost. Not just this season, but really, ever for a long time. Historically, Columbia has had a hard time winning big games and certainly close games in recent years. That game certainly could have went either way, but it didn't. It went Columbia's way for Penn, and Cred gave Stefanini for nearly coming up with a triple-double, and Patrick Tape with great work inside, as usual. He's been pretty underrated this year, but they were.
I certainly agree with that. Having seen him on Saturday night, first guy, and I hate to say this, he was the first guy who outplayed Richmond Arirabuza. He got him in foul trouble, limited him. He didn't get the ball much. He only scored 2 points. He just had a field day with him, but he outplayed him.
Mm.
That was a big factor in that game, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was. And Columbia was 4-20 in games decided by 6 points or fewer, dating back to the start of last season, prior to that win at the Palestra.
Just amazing.
Yeah, it's hard to be that, to have that, and a lot of it's luck. I mean, some of it is, not having the talent to finish games and, maybe, not having that extra layer of, I don't know, that finishing off. It's hard to put it into words. Whatever the intangible, I guess, of coming up with those games. But it was also their first Ivy Road win in 18 games, actually, going back to their very first under Jim Engels at Cornell. His very first Ivy game was under him as a head coach was a win at Cornell. They hadn't won since then, January of 2017. So they were due, and I was happy to see them actually pull that out. Elsewhere, Brown was also due. They hadn't beaten Harvard in a decade and were able to come up with an 88-79 win in Providence. Huge, huge win. Desmond Cambridge came alive, 30 points in 33 minutes. He was very much the game-stealing talent at the offensive end that he had been for a lot of this year prior to Ivy play, before his bit of a shooting slump and what we saw last year. So he was more himself, and Brown was able to finish off the sweep the following night, very much still in the Ivy League tournament conversation.
There's no question about that. And if Cambridge gets back to the level that we know we can achieve, Brown is a very legitimate threat, not only to get in, perhaps to reach the final.
Yes. Yes, they certainly they've got the talent. I mean, they've certainly got the raw talent. And Mike Martin was on the podcast last week and made the point that the defensive intensity and performance has been there in Ivy play for all except their home loss to Penn. But the offense, they just weren't clicking, hitting shots, and they were able to get that over the top, push them over the top against Harvard Friday night, and win what was, again, another lower scoring battle.
Well, historically, Brown's defense has always been near the bottom of the league.
Mm-hmm.
They've been able to score, but they haven't been able to stop. Out much from Cambridge. That was an outstanding game they played against us. I'm glad we have to play them again, but at least we'll have them at home.
And they were able to complete they were down 8 points in the second half and able to come back against a Dartmouth squad that is losing a lot of close games. There are no doormats, certainly, in the Ivy League. Dartmouth just at 2-8 is having a bit of a tough time. Again, they close loss to Cornell to Penn to Princeton to Brown to Harvard. They've, you know, just, you know, having a bit of a tough time with the defense and finishing games late, but they're certainly right there. Elsewhere on the men's side, of course, Yale actually won relatively easily compared to some of those games against Dartmouth Friday night before. And let's talk about this. Harvard pulling it out at Yale on a Bryce Aiken, yet another Bryce Aiken buzzer beater. That one out, 88-86 Crimson at JLA. Without Justin Bassey,
they're Miles Stevens, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, somebody who anchors the defense, but also can certainly score in bunches too, and pretty much does everything. Winning at Yale, at your arch rival, on the road, on a Saturday night, second leg of a back-to-back. To win in that manner after the hot start that Yale started that game on, all of it very, very, very impressive. Bryce Aiken just absolutely dominant right now. He's averaged 28.5 points per game in his last six Ivy outings, including four KenPom game MVP awards. The last six games.
When Princeton played them, the middle of the second half, we had a 6-point lead, 56-50, and Bryce Aiken made an unreasonable three. I mean, it was a shot he had no business taking, and he was fouled on the shot and made a 4-point play, and the air went right out of the Princeton balloon. And over the last minutes, Aiken outscored Princeton himself. I think you pointed that out, 20-19. It was just a phenomenal.
Yeah, he really did. And, you know, of course, the threes to pull Harvard even with Penn force in overtime, which they won on another Saturday night. At the Palestra, you know, it's coming back, and I'm doing all this after coming back from a major injury, after not playing in game action for 348 days. Certainly one of the most incredible stories in the Ivy League this season. It's been awesome to watch, and it's not done yet.
Penn pretty much has to win out at this point. Yes, they could get help to get in, but they can't rely on anyone else. And they visit Harvard Friday night. Very, very big game.
It is, and I do think they've got – I think they can probably afford to lose one more, given that they were able to beat Cornell Saturday night. I think it's still possible to get in at 7-7 rather. It seems very unlikely, unlike the past, including when Penn was able to come back from 0-6 in 2017 to get to 6-8. That's not going to do it this year. So if they do drop that one at Harvard, I do think they'll have to win the final three, including a Friday night matchup with Yale. Will be tough, but
I don't think they want to take the position.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not recommending
that. If they finish 7-7 in Princeton, all of its remaining four games, and finishes 7-7, I think Princeton is a tiebreaker because it beat Penn twice.
Oh yes, yeah. I think Princeton's in good shape. I think Penn is looking at beating out Cornell and Brown to get there, and I don't think Penn fans really have any delusions at this point of trying to place ahead of Princeton or try to.
Another big game this weekend will be Cornell at Brown, especially if they can. Not likely that Cornell will win on Friday night, but Brown could lose. Brown wins Friday night, then it's obviously a must game for Cornell on Saturday night. So it's huge. I mean, these are teams now trying to battle for survival.
They become de facto tournament games at this point of the season. They really do. And with Brown, of course, KenPom's been high on Brown all year.
And should be.
Certainly the talent is there, the defensive improvement. So KenPom likes Brown this week. Gives him at least a 78% chance of winning both games over Columbia and Cornell to take
that. That's not surprising.
No.
And then 7-5. And Princeton could be 7-5 after the weekend.
And then they would play each other.
Face Brown next Friday night.
Right. And it's kind of setting up Brown, that road trip at Princeton and Penn to end the year is going to be obviously huge. Cornell.
Yeah, I think no matter what happens this weekend, that's going to be, unless Princeton sweeps, and the chances of that, according to KenPom, are not very good.
Yeah, it'll have Ivy implications one way or another that weekend. And of course, Cornell finishes looking ahead. We probably shouldn't look ahead, but they look ahead to or finish with Harvard and Dartmouth. We'll try to clinch perhaps getting into the Ivy League tournament with a win over Dartmouth for the second straight season to end their season. If you're Penn, you're trying to hang on. But it's tough, you know. It's and dug this hole, you know. It's tough because I think the second half against Cornell showed you what the defense can do, what it is capable of, and what it was capable of and did last year in terms of having the Ivy's best defense. Harvard was right there too, but. Obviously, Penn's won the day in the end, it was a much different defense than the previous three halves that weekend at the Palestra, frankly. And maybe a little bit of it was fatigue with Cornell in the second half of the second leg of the back-to-back. Disrupt them in ways that they couldn't in their matchup in Ithaca. It's coming down to those three, and of course there's not just a race for the number four seed, there's a race for the number one seed too, now, especially after Yale got swept by Harvard yet again. That's now six straight regular season losses for Yale to its arch rival Harvard.
That is amazing.
Yeah, they've had their number lately, although that overlooks the Ivy League tournament win that Yale scored over Harvard at the Palestra 2 years ago. So maybe Yale will look for that again the second time.
That was a very tight game. I remember attending it and I didn't know who Princeton would end up playing until the end of that game, and I wasn't looking forward to playing either one of them.
Yeah, that was another thriller, and we've had a lot of thrillers this season too. But that was another one where another Bryce Aiken heavy game. Although he ultimately couldn't come through at the very end in that one.
He made a bad pass at the end of that game. Yeah. I don't think anybody thought he was going to pass because he hadn't done too much of that.
No, yeah, he had 28 points in that one, too. He's been scoring 28 points or more a lot lately. That's kind of been accustomed to now at this point. So Penn's defense is, maybe it's a good time to get Harvard after an emotional win away from Leviades against an arch rival. Try to get them after that. But that's thinking from a fan perspective. From a team perspective, it's got to be, more of the same. Try to keep it going from the last stanza and, try to. One thing is the Penn does have a disciplined defense in terms of not fouling. Category. So, trying not to feed into that, putting Bryce Aiken on the free throw line will be big. But
it certainly will.
But, Yale, it should be noted, Harvard is they don't allow offensive boards. They're very good at limiting second chance opportunities, second chance points. That's really how they were able to beat Yale, was beating them 11-4 in second chance points. And, something that Yale, I feel like if these two teams meet in the Ivy League tournament again, Yale and Harvard, Yale is going to have to try to successfully crash the offensive boards a little more, which is something that they've typically done under James Jones. It's something that's typically been one of their strengths. But we'll see how it goes. I will say, going forward for Princeton, I feel like, and I'm sure you agree, George, I feel like they're due for another good shooting night.
let's really hope so, because Princeton historically has been among the league's leaders in 3-point percentage. I remember a couple years ago they had three players at 40% or better. That disappeared this year. Kevin Kennedy, of course, has had his personal issues, which remain to be resolved. It appears at this point that he's not going to be coming back. One of the better three-point shooters coming into the season in the entire league. A funny thing is, they're 3-3 with the lineup in the league, and 4-0 without him.
Yeah.
Princeton had a three-game run here, and the key to it was actually defending the three-point. They didn't give up a lot of free three-point attempt. They made 12 out of 26, which was like a breath of fresh air. Henderson was visibly relieved after that game.
Pitt Princeton's 12 for 26 against Columbia from deep. And still, even after that, they're still only shooting south of 28%.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. They played
pretty good defense. Most of their games have been what I describe as ugly. Most of their wins have been ugly. They've been really tough, gutted out. Saturday night, they won by 18, but it was the toughest 18-point win I've seen. Columbia was high after Friday night. They came up that list. Played pretty well. First half was virtually even. Princeton did a better job of Stephanie, a much better job in the second half. And of course, the sophomores, Ryan Schwieger and Jerome DeRozier, were fabulous. DeRozier had two career doubles, both of them this weekend. Schwieger had 23 on Friday night and 20 points on Saturday night. So those kids are confident. For Princeton, the four games they have left are against the three teams that beat them, and against Dartmouth that they were able to hang on 69-60. We're in second place right now, but Harvard is beating up. Yale is solid, and we've got a very, very difficult road ahead of us.
Yeah, it's that time of year where all the roads get harder for all the Ivies. I feel like the much ballyhooed Road to Ivy Madness that they're all on at this point. But it'll be interesting to see how it goes down. Looking ahead to Browns weekend, which is, you know, an especially pivotal one, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what Brown gets or asks for Brandon Anderson, whose minutes had been greatly limited a lot of the season, certainly in the Ivy slate, but he was a critical figure in that win at home over Dartmouth Saturday night, 21 points in just 24 minutes. He's always been excellent at drawing fouls, getting to the foul line. He notched the second highest offensive rating of his career against Division I competition. Yeah, I mean, if you're Brown, I think you've got to be excited about the offense's trying to come together a little bit and get up to the defense's level here.
And well, they have a lot of weapons. When Anderson showed up like that, boy, it's just great time for them to be coming into their own. Brown is a very, very good team. It's not going to back down. Those have a lot of fight. They might be very deep, but Stefanini can hurt you. Quentin Adlish can hurt you. Tapia's playing pretty well. So that's going to be a tough game, and Brown might just be looking ahead to Cornell, and you don't want to do that.
Yeah, Penn is the perfect perfect case study in what happens if you don't play at your best against Columbia on the Friday night, with Cornell coming the second night. Don't do what Penn did if you're Brown. And you know, if you can just put together sweeps at home, you're going to be in good shape. You know, Brown now with three in a row. What are you looking ahead to with Princeton at Harvard Saturday night? Obviously, a marquee matchup. What are the keys other than stopping Bryce Aiken or trying to?
You can't say. Other than stop racing, you just can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's going to put Stevens on him, and that's probably the best matchup. If anybody can slow him down, Miles Stevens can't. The problem historically, Princeton's only won at Harvard one time in Mitch Henderson's coaching career. And it was the strangest game.
Yes.
if you remember it.
Yes.
It was kind of a fluke. So that's something that it's on Mitch's mind. It's just hard to win there. It really is. I think Arie Raguza pretty well against Harvard. He's got to come back. He did not have a weekend of its need. Certainly play well. He can score, he can defend, and stays out of foul trouble. That's a big key, which is what he did do against Columbia. And if the sophomore here in DeRozier is playing with a lot of confidence. So I think it's going to be a very good game. I'd have to give the edge if I was betting. I'd have to give the edge to Harvard at home, but I think it's going to be a good game that comes down to the last couple of possessions. Anything can happen.
Yeah, so we'll have to see the Columbia-Brown game and the Penn and Harvard game Friday night will both be on ESPNU, one after the other. Penn and Harvard.
I think it's 5 o'clock for Browns.
Yeah, it's an early. It's an early tip. Yeah. Yeah,
that's kind of strange.
5 o'clock, yeah. It's good for TV, though.
Yes, sir. I'll be watching.
5 o'clock for Columbia and Brown, ESPNU, Penn and Harvard, ESPNU at 7. Saturday night, Cornell at Brown will be on the CW in addition to ESPN+. Plus. All other games on the aforementioned ESPN+. Plus. Flipping over back to the women's side, it wasn't just Princeton and Penn this past weekend. Although you know, certainly Princeton, you know, that was another thing, is, you know, going into that huge win at Penn, Princeton really struggled to put away both Cornell and Columbia at home this past weekend. Both games kind of followed a similar script. Princeton jumping out early, and then letting their Empire State visitor slowly but surely come back.
Well, that's how they lost the Penn game. The same way in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they just lost control of that one.
But they did survive.
They did, and that's the bottom line. I know that you know, the game against Cornell, Courtney Banghart wasn't really pleased despite the victory. you're laughing.
Well, I laugh because I was there and I visited her and the team and a couple other journalists after that game. She was not happy, and she has a way of letting you know she's not happy with you. She is.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe a fire was lit there that burned all the way through to the trip to the Palestra. Although, again, the same thing did happen the following night against, well, not quite the same thing. It wasn't maybe as quite of a dramatic of a comeback. Columbia still, got down in a big hole and, almost got their way out.
Well, Banghart didn't, because I asked her, was point blank, if she thought the team was looking ahead to Tuesday night. And she said, absolutely not. But I don't believe that. They had a pretty easy time with Cornell and Columbia on the road. Of course, Bella scored 45 against Columbia. Yeah. I just don't know that the team necessarily thought they were going to get it in a real scrap. But of course, they had pretty good leads, so they relaxed a little bit. And to the credit of the kids in Columbia and Cornell, they certainly said, Princeton, who? I mean, they got back in the game, and that's fine.
Right. And Columbia's comeback was, I don't want to sell it short, it was dramatic. It just happened a little bit earlier. They made a lot of the comeback at a 25-point third quarter, whereas Cornell had a 25-point fourth quarter against Princeton.
Columbia had a backcourt, a slender kid, skinny, and boy, she was on fire, and her name escapes me as I sit here. But
Clemens.
A lot of big shots.
Yeah, Jeanette Clemens. Yeah, she had 20 points on 10 for 21 shooting in 32 minutes. Columbia has made strides this year under Megan.
Former Tiger assistant.
Yes.
Megan, who was a really nice young lady. I had the pleasure of being a couple times, and she was, of course, very grateful to get a chance to coach at her alma mater, and I think she's going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, they've made real strides. They've got a very young team. The youngest squad that I can think of for any team in either gender this year, in terms of who their main contributors are. Sienna Durr is a prime Ivy Rookie of the Year candidate, certainly, and they've got Markham and Casey and a lot of young talent there. Madison Hardy, of course, coming up, huge scoring in the win over Brown late last weekend. But I think Columbia's in pretty good shape here.
Well, it's almost a cliche on the mid side to say how the talent level of the league is up, and it's certainly is, but it's also up on the women's side.
It is.
A lot of really good.
Yeah, I mean, the only team that's really seems to be struggling right now is Brown. Very, very brutal weekend for Brown, losing both games by a combined 80 points at Harvard and Dartmouth. Just the offensive firepower struggling, defense, you know. When you lose by those margins, everything.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they have 3,000-point scorers on their team.
They've got, I mean, when you think of the career that Shayna Mehta's had and Justine Gaziano, you know, they've got top flight scoring.
But they can't stop it, but that's the problem.
Yeah, and that's not been just this year.
Right.
You know, so they've, you know, struggling a bit, and, you know, that's kind of where they're at right now. Maybe they can try to finish strong and, you know, try to get a little bit of, you know, not just pride, but certainly momentum going into next year. Cornell has been sneakily. Laura Bagwell Katalinic has been certainly a first-team All-Ivy talent. She's in the top five league-wide in both scoring and rebounds. Scored 8 points in a row in that near completed comeback at Jadwin this past weekend. Cornell, you know, of course, pulled out that huge upset at Yale the previous weekend, and you know, a very different DNA than Columbia, very, very defensive, and just not getting enough from the 3-point line. Really, that's the big Reds problem. Is they're just, you know, they're easily last in the conference in 3-point shooting, just over 25%.
That's tough. That's tough. That's Princeton like this year.
Yeah, it is. But Cornell also, they don't shoot it very much from deep either. It's just not a major part of the game. They shoot by far the fewest number of threes in the Ivy League, far fewer than the seventh fewest, which is Penn, actually, in terms of how many threes they shoot. But, you know, one of the big stories, of course, Dartmouth pulling even, a huge, huge win over Brown Saturday night, and, you know, a dramatic, dramatic win. Paula Lenhart with the putback of Ice Quiñones' 3-point attempt to give Dartmouth the buzzer-beating win over Yale, 56-54. Dartmouth and Yale now tied in the Ivy standings for the fourth seed with 2 weekends to play. It could go either way.
It's just exciting on both sides. Yeah. The battle for fourth. It's a lot of fun because there's so many teams involved. And, you know, as we've talked here, it occurs to me that there's been at least one huge upset every week on both sides, men's and women's. There really has been.
Yeah, it's not all fun.
I can't remember a weekend when there wasn't big upset. You wonder, looking ahead, what will be the upset this weekend? I have no idea.
No, yeah, that's.
I believe there will be one somewhere.
Well, let's see. Any of these games? Friday night on the women's side, Yale at Cornell, Dartmouth at Princeton, Harvard at Penn. That game will be on NBC Sports Philadelphia, in addition to ESPN Plus. Brown at Columbia on SNY in addition to ESPN Plus, and Saturday night Dartmouth at Penn on ESPN3. The other three matchups on ESPN Plus. Princeton, a huge game Saturday night against Harvard. Of course, they better not look over Dartmouth Friday night. Dartmouth certainly
I think it's unlikely that Harvard will get a sweep down south, but it wouldn't surprise me if they won one of those games.
No, not at all.
If they won, would be quite an upset. But my way of thinking, we're going to get one somewhere.
Yeah, it's just a matter of which one. Yeah, but Dartmouth played Princeton very tough up in Hanover. Played Princeton very tough a couple weeks ago. So, I don't think, it's at a time of year where every game gets, every game is, comes at a premium and all the cliches.
It's been a pleasure this year getting a chance to cover some of these games and to post on the site. I know you've got fans out there pay attention to the site, and it's just a delight to bring.
Yeah, it really is. It's pretty cool to be able to do, and if you've listened to us this long, you must be. You must be dedicated. So thanks.
Mike, what they don't know is that you and I talked for half an hour before you started to record.
Yeah, we could go on for hours, and we do, obviously. So thanks so much for listening, and George, thank you so much as always for coming on the podcast.
You're most welcome, of course, and I'm looking forward to being in touch with you after the weekend.
Indeed, there'll be much more ground to cover for sure. Take care, George.
Thanks, Mike.